TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Align, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles. If you know someone that needs a referral for a therapist, for an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call, 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down. For your loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. If somebody wants to participate in a parent support group via Zoom still, feel free to share our number. All calls are strictly confidential. Our number again, 718-758-0400. Tonight, I'm really excited about this show. It's something that so many people have struggles with. And I'd like to welcome on tonight, Avigail Gimple. Hi, Avigail. How are you?
Hey there, Ruchama. I'm great. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I want to specifically thank Mask for the important and vital work that you do for the community. Your work is really saving many, many lives.
Thank you, Baruch Hashem. Thank you. And I want everyone to know that Avigail Gimple actually is also, besides being a teacher and an ADHD specialist, she is an author of a book called Hyper Healing, The Empowered Parent's Complete Guide to Raising a Healthy Child with ADHD Symptoms. And Avigail teaches in college. She lectures in many, many schools. She's calling in from Israel to do the show. She's in private practice. She trains parents and coaches that deal with families that struggle with their loved ones with ADHD. And she really is like, she's a mother of several children. She'll share her story of how she got into it. And I'd like to welcome you. It's really, really nice having you on finally. We have been speaking a lot and we're glad to finally be able to have you on. Your book is available. Anyone could buy it on Amazon. And anybody will want to speak to Avigail, just contact Mask, and we'll make sure that she gets in touch with you. So, Avigail, let's get right to it. Let's start.
Sounds great.
Let's start with, ADHD. That's a big topic. And I'd like you to share what your background and how you got into ADHD topic, please.
Absolutely. ADHD is extremely personal for me. It all begins when I was 20 and started teaching, and I was particularly drawn to my ADHD students. I loved their zest and energy and fun, quirky personalities. And I loved the kids who sat in the corner quietly and didn't have much to say, but when they did have something to say, it was always very insightful and fun, but I could not get these kids to learn. So I did work very hard on creating a program specifically for these kids. At the very same time, I met my husband, Daniel Gimpel, who is wonderful and energetic and has more energy than most people I've ever met in the world. And I guess I might have been drawn to him because he reminded me of the energy of my students. And what we know about ADHD and ADHD symptoms is that it's a personality type that's passed from generation to generation. So my husband's energy was certainly passed down to our children. And while I was building programs for my students, I landed up with wonderful children being diagnosed one after the next with ADHD. So I had to kind of walk around to the other side of the desk and put on my mother hat along with my teacher hat and try to figure out how to help my children with their ADHD diagnosis, as well as with really digging down deep to what the causes of these symptoms were and the very best kind of treatments for my own children. And that's what really led me to writing the book, because I'd been working for over 20 years with ADHD in the classroom, in my home, and with so many clients, and of course, with my college students. So this is a very personal journey, and I've put my heart and soul into it. And I always say that this book, Hyperhealing, is kind of like my seventh child.
Well, it is indeed a very, very, I mean, I really reviewed this book. It's very detailed, very hands-on, and you actually give homework. So first, let's talk about you writing the book. There are so many books out there on ADD and ADHD. So why did you think your book would be helpful to parents? What is different about it?
So I love buying books. I have an entire bookshelf full of books on ADHD and all sorts of different childhood challenges. And I've read all of them cover to cover. And there's some great literature out there on ADHD. And I recommend that you all go out and buy and read fantastic books. What was missing was a comprehensive program. And what I saw is that in these many years of meeting up with clients and students, that I was able to walk the parent by the hand through understanding what their child was dealing with, and then build a personalized program for that child. So this costs parents a lot of money. And unfortunately, most parents are not only don't have enough money to pay for a coach or someone to work with them on ADHD, a therapist, but they also are not even aware that ADHD symptoms have many different causes, and that each child's symptoms are coming from a different cause. And therefore, each child has to be looked at as an individual. So my goal with each of my students and clients is to go on an investigative journey, find out why this child is struggling, and not a one-size-fits-all program, and then be able to apply that to that kid. So my goal was, after so many years of seeing that my program is very helpful to children and their families, I said, this is not fair that parents do not have this information, and that parents who can't afford the kind of help I give don't have any access to it. So what my book adds essentially is that it's a coaching program in book form, which is why I give homework and what I call it an action plan. And I specifically am talking to the parents of kids with ADHD symptoms that they themselves struggle with these symptoms, which is why at the end of each book, each chapter, I have a cheat sheet. So you never have to go back to the chapter, and you could very quickly access the information that you read in the chapter that was relevant to your child. And a parent can also jump from one chapter to a different if they see that this cause of ADHD symptoms is not relevant to their child. They can constantly be referring back to the book and getting the help that I offer directly to my clients in my office.
Well, let's talk about ADHD being genetic. And I want to just add that for those parents that they themselves may be ADHD, your book is very helpful with the homework at the end, because then, like you said, as they review, it makes it easier for them instead of having to sit through a whole nother chapter again.
Right. So that was my goal. And I, when parents read the book, and therapists and all clinicians, anyone who is involved with children, the feedback that I've gotten is that they feel like I'm having a conversation with them, which is my goal. So you asked me about the genetic cause of ADHD. What I said just a few minutes ago is that ADHD symptoms have many causes. The list of symptoms we're seeing with children are real symptoms that kids are struggling with, but they're being caused by so many different things. And one of the main causes is genetics. And what is the genetic thing? What are we passing on to our children? What we're passing on to them is a personality type. And I call it the instant gratification personality. And this personality is a personality of wanting things here and now and fun and interesting and exciting and even slightly dangerous. But so this personality has a lot to add to our society. These might be the inventors. These are the people that are noticing everything and putting things together in a creative and novel way that the rest of us might not see. We have actors and we have artists. So these people are very necessary in our society. And no person is self-contained, but just as a shy person might do very well in some area, or someone who's very diligent might do great in school, but might not do as well socially, you're going to have a person with instant gratification personality do great with coming up with novel, exciting ideas, but they have a terrible time with follow through. So if that is your child, then what you're working on is strengthening their ability to be spontaneous, to notice everything, but you must then strengthen their weaker muscle, which is creating habits, because a child like this is not going to want to repeat the same thing twice because that's boring. So in the book, I help parents work their child through creating the habits that they haven't created until now, kind of like waking up in the morning. Why is it that a child, the 10,000th time that I wake the child up in the morning, is surprised all over again? Well, that doesn't make sense. He knows he has to wake up. He might know it in some place, but he's never created a habit to do that. And therefore, we have to help that child work on that habit. There's another habit they're missing, which is completing tasks. If they're enjoying what they're doing, then they're going to keep going. The minute it gets boring and uninteresting, they're going to want to stop doing what they were doing and move on to the next novel idea. So we as parents have to help that child enjoy the novelty and yet follow through till the very end. So this is not a disordered personality. It's a healthy personality that requires extra help. One more quick example would be moving from one activity to another. So a child is enjoying reading a book or watching a movie, and he's having fun right now. And you say, okay, it's shower time. So what's going to happen to the child who's an instant gratification kid? He's happy now. He's enjoying himself now. Try to drag him away from what he's doing and stick him in the shower. That's not going to work out very well. You're going to have a tantrum. You're going to have a blow up. And then you finally get the kid in the shower. And what does he do? He's singing his heart out. He's happy as happy can be. So therefore, we have to help these children with transition. And a lot of it depends on our communication with the child and our ability to calmly help that child create habits.
Thank you. So let's go back to the overview, the definition of ADHD, because, you know, parents need to realize that it starts when they're younger, but it does go into adulthood. And it can contribute to low self-esteem and troubled relationships, difficulty in school, at work. So do you want to just give the definition, the difference between ADD and ADHD, for those that are listening that are not understanding of what the H is for?
Okay. So the difference between ADD and ADHD is kind of semantic. Really, the H is hyperactivity. So there's different types of people that are struggling to focus in school, to get tasks completed, to follow through, to build social interactions properly, to have emotional regulation. Those people can either have a very highly active personality or to be more dreamy. And so you're going to have the dreamer sitting in the back of the classroom looking through the window all day and maybe doodling to themselves. And then you have the kid with the big H, the hyper one, which tends to be more my family style. And that kid is jumping around the classroom and trying to draw attention to him or herself. So those are the differences. Not all people who have these ADHD symptoms carry them into adulthood. And what I found is that people who are able to see these challenges as what they are, which is challenges that need to be worked through, and then gaining the skill they need, tend to be able to shed these ADHD symptoms as they grow into teenage years and then into adulthood. A lot of people are not aware of the skills that they're missing. And not only that, a lot of people are unaware of the fact that ADHD has other causes. For example, emotional dysregulation, stress, anxiety, or trauma, for one, or some physiological problems, let's say having a gut dysbiosis, a gut problem. And we would see that if the child had other health issues like sleep problems or constant headaches, stomach aches, skin rashes, asthma, autoimmune conditions. So we'd see it there. Those people are not going to grow out of their ADHD symptoms unless these problems are dealt with. If it's emotional problems, then they need to deal with those emotional issues. If it's physiological, then they need to change their diet and they need to work through helping themselves become healthier people. And those are the people who grow out of it. There are people who still carry symptoms into adulthood. And that definitely does, just as you said, Ruchama, definitely causes those people to struggle with relationships and with jobs. That's a big issue. So another reason why I wrote this book was so that we can catch children while they're children and give them the help they need in a really warm embrace and allow them to grow out of these symptoms into healthy adulthood.
So, you know, the symptoms include the limited attention, the hyperactivity, absent-mindedness, difficulty focusing, forgetfulness, short attention span. But for some, there's aggression, or there's fidgeting, or they're impulsive. For others, there may be depression and learning disabilities involved as well. So there are a lot of different definitions that go under the ADHD and ADD umbrella. For some, what is your take? You are not a doctor. I'm saying that so that everyone knows that. You are not a doctor. But from your end, and by the way, I should add that I do interview those that do advocate for children to be on meds and those that don't believe in meds. But I do offer both angles because of my following and people want to hear both angles. What is your take on medicating kids with ADHD? Are you for or against?
Okay, medication? Well, I could say, let's leave that as a cliffhanger because my second book called Hyperhealing, Show Me the Science is coming out in a couple of months. But I'll answer the question because I think that's important for everybody to hear. I'm not for or against medication. I often get the question, do you believe in Ritalin? And my answer to that is I believe in God. And what I see whenever I am faced with a choice to take medication or not, what I do is ask two questions. Is this safe and is this effective? And is it effective means, is it going to help the child right now? And what's it going to do for the child long term? So I've done a deep dive into the research on medication and on all the medications. Again, as you said correctly, not as a doctor, but as someone who's involved in ADHD, as a mother, as a teacher, and as a college lecturer. And it's very clear. So I generally, when I meet with clients, do not deal with their medication. I say, that's between you and your doctor. I'm happy to give you my take on it. And then you make your decision with your doctor. But what I say about ADHD medication is that it is powerful and it is a tool just like any other tool for ADHD. We have many different tools in our shed to help a child with ADHD symptoms flourish. Some of them are coaching. Some of them are directly through parents. Like I said, dealing with the health of the child. We also deal with screen time, sleep. There's many, many different ways to help a child do great with their ADHD symptoms and really flourish and overcome a lot of those symptoms. One of the tools is medication. So I say medication is powerful and we have to treat it with a lot of respect. First of all, we have to understand what the medication does and what the side effects of those medications are. And we have to weigh if those side effects are worthwhile. What we see is that short-term medication is very useful. Kids definitely do much better in the short term, and in the first few months, maybe even the year that they start taking it. Usually by the time we get to a year and a half, children start having different side effects. We have to switch the medication. It becomes an entire story. And then we have to start asking ourselves, is this the direction we want to go in? What I usually recommend is for parents whose children are bleeding, which means that they're having social, emotional, academic, psychological stress because of the ADHD symptoms they're dealing with, and they absolutely are not capable of getting to be part of a program that I would set up with that parent, I say, give the child a break for a little while, because when a child is bleeding, a child's fallen down and has a huge gash, what do we want to do is put a bandage on that gash, and we want to stop the bleeding. Now, if we rely on that bandage to be our long-term treatment plan, we have a problem because the child's arm is going to get infected. But if we use that wisely and respectfully, and we use that just for a short amount of time to get the child to a place where he's available and ready to join us on this journey of healing, then we slowly and carefully, with doctor's help, can remove the bandage, meaning the medication, and let the child know that he or she is healthy. And that's very important for children, for parents to hear. The child is healthy and struggling, and we then help that child get to the place that the child needs to be.
So you brought up the screen epidemic that we have now. It's really a very, very hard time for children and adults, let alone people with ADHD. You know, that makes it even more difficult when having to do school online, on Zoom, etc. So let's talk about how the screen actually affects a child. I know that when you go onto sites and there are a bunch of boxes all over the place, just popping up, moving constantly, I can't even imagine what it's like for an ADHD person. Really?
Yeah, stressful. It's a nightmare. Right. So I am decidedly not ADHD. And when we got put into lockdown with COVID and I had three kids who were on Zoom and I had to be attached to my phone constantly, getting the kids onto the right links and making sure they did their homework, I got addicted to my screen. And I actually had to put a block on my screen just so that I could get myself back into control. So that's how powerful it is. These screens were meant to make us fail. They were meant to make us addicted. Now you take a child who is an instant gratification child and who wants the fast and the now and the novel, and you put a screen in their hand. It's literally like opening up the liquor cabinet and saying, go for it, take your drinks. That's what's happening when we hand kids these screens. They have no tools to deal with the screens and the addiction, nor do we have the tools. So we have to understand that before we do anything, we have to help our children by locking the liquor cabinet and making sure they don't have free access to screens and making sure that we put blocks on it, certain sites that are absolutely off limits, certain hours that are off limits. We have to do that for our children in order to protect them. And, you know, we like to say we want to trust our children to be mature enough to be able to handle it. If we, the adults, are not being mature enough and not managing to handle this, then we certainly should not be putting this test to our children. So it's very, very important for the parents to hold the key to the children's screens. because these kids are going to fail and they are failing. And what I'm seeing over and over again recently is that I meet with teenagers who have no interests and dreams and aspirations. The screens have sucked all of their ambition out of them. And if we don't have desire and ambition, then how do we take the next step in our life? So we have to help our children with this and let them understand how strong the draw to screens is and how dangerous that is. Even though screens are very useful, you and I are meeting due to technology, and that's fantastic. So we have to help our children, A, learn how to manage it, and B, we have to put brakes and blocks on the screens for ourselves as a personal example and also for our children, because we're all failing this test. And it's definitely creating a lot more instant gratification and a lot more ADHD symptoms in our kids. And they're suffering and terror and paying a terrible price.
And it's so distracting, everything that's going on some of those sites, the pop-ups, it's really, people do become curious and they go on to sites they should never be on. So please get your computers and phones, get them tagged, make sure that you have everything in place before your children have access to them. You do spend a lot of time discussing diet in your book, and I'd like you to explain to my listeners how that's related to ADHD, very related.
It is indeed. Well, what we've learned about in the last 15 years or so is the gut brain connection. And our gut is actually called our second brain. And if our gut and all the microbes in our gut, which we call the microbiome, all the way from our mouth down to the anus, that whole area, if it's not in check and if there's not a balance, then our brain will not be able to function well. And how will we know that the child has this gut brain connection that's not managing very well? We'll see it on the child. We'll see a runny nose and coughing and often getting sick and needing tubes in their ears and having rashes very often. Kids that are extremely sleepy or have trouble falling asleep. All of these symptoms and many, many more, which are listed very, very thoroughly in the book, we will see that all of those things are connected to the gut. And what I've found in my many years of working with kids with ADHD and their parents is that we clean up their diet. And once we strengthen the microbiome, the brain comes alive and the child learns to focus again. It's almost miraculous, but it's a tremendous amount of work and parents have to be very dedicated to it. But when parents can get over that hurdle and make the decision as a family to do the work, they see absolute changes in their children. And parents call me back and say, for the first time, I was able to sit on the couch and read for an hour and a half. I haven't done that in 20 years. So it's good for everybody. And I highly recommend what I call the 30-day challenge that will get all of our brains working at its maximum.
Well, I want to really thank you so much. I know we could go on and on. We're running out of time. I'd like to thank you again for coming on, Abigail. Hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you so much.
Again, Hyperhealing by Abigail Gimple. You can get it on Amazon. And I'd like to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos. And always remember, hang in, hold on, and now virtually, hug tight. Please consider to do.
Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.
Donate online at maskparents.org. Tonight's show is in memory of Rivka Bas Yisroel. Thank you and have a good night.
And you're listening to the Talkline Network over WVIP 93.5 FM HD2, New Rochelle, New York. We are America's only Jewish radio program on regular broadcast radio on the internet and digital platforms. Enjoy.
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.